a dear woman and her ever-nagging husband of 50 years, both of them unchurched, went on vacation to Jerusalem. While they were there, the husband ate a bad matzo ball and he died. The undertaker told the wife, "You can have your husband shipped home for $5,000, or you can bury him here in the Holy Land for $150. The woman thought about it and told the undertaker that she'd have her husband shipped home. The undertaker asked, "Why would you spend $5,000 to ship your husband home when it would be wonderful to have him buried here and you'd only spend $150? The wife replied, "Yesterday our tour guide told us about a man who died here and who was buried here and who 3 days later rose from the dead. I can't take that chance." Folks who are not churched have a hard time understanding resurrection. But that's okay. Those of us who darken the door of the church, although some of us only this Sunday during the year, have trouble with resurrection too. We've walked a long road since last Sunday. On that day, we celebrated Jesus' entry into Jerusalem, but we did so with a bittersweet edge, as when you know you're celebrating a terminal friend's last birthday. On Thursday, we remembered Jesus' poignant last evening with his friends before his chaotic goodbye. And on Friday, we grieved his death and our own sense of bereavement and loss. Each of those 3 days, Palm Sunday, Maundy Thursday, and Good Friday, is visceral. They connect with basic and familiar human emotions and sensibilities. They amplify the experience of our everyday lives. And that's why our smiles on Palm Sunday are tender, and our expressions on Maundy Thursday are shell-shocked, and our tears on Good Friday are real. Easter, that's infinitely more difficult. Unbridled joy is the emotion of this day, and the locus of that joy, we're told, is resurrection. But though we search for another human experience similar to this particular kind of joy, we come up lacking. And so we clothe our joy in what are some admittedly strange customs, celebrating giant rabbits who sneak into our homes by night and lay colored eggs. Perhaps the best analogy we can come up with in our own lives to resurrection is what I would call the New Year's impulse, when we make all of those resolutions at the turn of the calendar year to reform or amend some part of our lives, to change our routine or better ourselves. And then we think of that as a kind of rebirth. This year I'll lose 20 pounds. Or this year I'll learn to play the guitar. Or this year I'll attend church more regularly. While all of these are commendable, especially that last one, is that what resurrection means? Is that really what it looks like? To answer that question, we need to join Mary Magdalene, who has just approached the tomb of Jesus. It's misty early morning, and Mary's eyes swim. For her, you see, it's still Good Friday. Mary had staked her life on Jesus, and she had pinned her fortune to his. But there have been consequences to that. On Friday, when he died on the cross, every hope in her life was crucified. She might as well have died too. And no resolution to better her life can change that. No reordering of things will make any difference. Even to try, that'd just be like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Can we step into her reality? Can we imagine what it feels like for life's course to be irrevocably set as a result of the decisions that we've made and headed downhill fast? Many can. The news these days is replete with those who go so far as to harm themselves or increasingly to harm others because they experience life as fixedly doomed. This must be what Mary feels. And she goes to look at Jesus' body in the grave as the final confirmation that all is lost. And when it's not there, for her the pit becomes unbelievably even deeper. She's without hope. And the silence of a life without hope can be deafening. In that silence, and through the dark and her tears, she barely sees the man who emerges from the mist. But when he speaks her name, it's so unexpected that her hopeless world is shattered and a new world takes its place. Mary sees Jesus in the dawn of that new day, and she sees him for who he truly is. He's alive. And she realizes that even her earlier expectations of who he was and what he was all about are nothing more than a pale shadow of this reality. Being one with Jesus is not about a reordering of the old life, even a good reordering. Being one with Jesus is about looking upon his resurrected self and realizing that that future that had stretched before us, that fixed future of diminished possibilities and sometimes hopelessness, is blessedly gone. In its place, the future is wide open. And that's the source of this crazy joy that we experience today. This is a joy that realizes unbelievably that our futures are not determined by the events we've already experienced or by the things we've endured in our lives, even those bad experiences and choices in which we're complicit. The ultimate future, whatever we must endure in this moment, is through Jesus rising, opened wide by grace. By the way, that's why we include, as we will today, the line, "He descended to the dead," in the Apostles' Creed. Even for those for whom death had already appeared victorious, Jesus opened a new future. New Year's Day is always a letdown. But for college bowl games, especially when the Razorbacks are playing, the wide-eyed hopes of the night before are caricatures in the bleary exhaustion of January the 1st. It's just another day. But what if you woke up this Easter morning and everything was different? It is. It is. From this day forward, nothing is the same, not for Mary and not for us. The reality that Jesus has bested death and risen accompanies us in all of our endeavors, all of our days. It blows the future wide open. Horizons are broader, and even what had seemed like the deepest pit is made shallow because Jesus stands on its other side. We are invited to participate in Jesus' resurrection both now and at the end of days. His resurrection remakes us so that the very basis, the ground of who we are, is now found in his resurrected self. This is not a reordering of the old life. This is new life altogether. Like morning's song, today he speaks our name as he did Mary's. And for us too, the deafening and the hopeless silence is ended. In a garden just at dawn, near the grave of human violence, the most precious word of life cleared his throat and ended silence for the good of us all. And he's here when we call him, bringing health, love, and laughter to life now and ever after for the good of us all.